podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
And welcome to Thursday's edition of the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. My name is Craig Anderson and I'm joined down the line by Tom Mott.
Hello, down the line. This is another part of Glasgow calling.
I would say you should have done that like satellite delay, like they used to do when someone was calling. So the main show you're at, but this was obviously all scheduled before the interesting events of Wednesday night's football. So the main show today is going to be, we're going to talk about the top 12 wingers and wide players. We've been handed this poisoned chalice this week of opening ourselves up to vitriol and criticism for contextless lists that then appear on the Twitter account. But nonetheless, I'm a big boy and I can deal with it, and I think you are as well, Tom.
I don't care what anyone thinks. I'm more than happy to hear everyone's opinions on Twitter. Please do send them to me, but I don't really care about them.
And we are going to do a Patreon, which was going to be kind of a brief, quick summary. It might end up being a bit longer, but it's a Patreon about Wednesday night's Cinch Premiership action, which turned out to be quite an exciting evening. Over 20 goals scored, three in particular that all but one support in Scottish football thoroughly enjoyed, I suspect. So
did you enjoy it, Craig?
I certainly did. I've got the most reason to enjoy it out of nearly anyone, but nonetheless, we will get onto that on the Patreon. And what we're going to do is talk about our top 12 wide players, and I think we should start with the type of caveat that doesn't appear on any of the tweets that go out. We've kind of had to make sure every player was only eligible for a single list, so we've had some players who've been put into other lists. So for example, Heart of Midlothian's Josh Ginnelly is going to be classified as a forward. Some of the players, Malik Tillman, Todd Cantwell, Blair Spittle, who some people might consider wide players, have been in the attacking midfielders list. We are basically looking at guys who play either on the side of a 4-4-2, but mostly not many 4-4-2s about. So down the sides of 4-3-3s and all the rest of it. But anyone basically who spends most of the game playing out wide is essentially how I've tried to classify it. So we originally had wingers, but I think wide players would be a better way of describing it, because some of these players are not wingers in a conventional style, and we'll get to those as we come along. No doubt there will be omissions and there will be people who everyone's raging isn't on there, but how did you find it selecting this, Tom?
Difficult. I think the top three, I think, immediately kind of were pretty set for me quite early on. But it wasn't like scrambling around at the bottom for scraps. Maybe the top three and then the next three or four were kind of fairly self-picking. But then when I got to the 9, 10, 11, 12, there's definitely omissions. There's definitely people that... And I found it difficult to weigh up current form versus what we know they're capable of versus at least one who, will they ever do it again?
Yeah. I assume that's the same one as me, and you're trying to give out these lifetime achievement awards. It's also hard because I think there's a really variety of like styles of player in this list as well.
How important they are to their teams as well. I think that's been a... That was like a nagging doubt in the back of my mind as well. Like, some of these players and the positions that I've put them in could go to another team in the league, and would they be as effective? Would they be as good? I don't know, but they are absolutely vital to the teams that they play for.
Yeah, and there's certainly, for me, there's a few clubs who haven't featured, and it'd probably not be a surprise which ones they are, but also it's always challenging to try and weigh up the amount of Celtic and Rangers players. I've certainly, I could have included someone like Sead Haksabanovic, who I think is a very good player, but I've left him out on the account of having several other Celtic players in the list. Like Scott Wright's not had his best season at Rangers compared to the previous one. I think he would have been in this last year, but players like that could have featured having, but we'll just crack on with it, Tom, and we'll start with position 12 on your list. Who have you got in the number 12 role?
I've got, and this is something of a legacy pick, but it's James Forrest. Is James Forrest still James Forrest? He hasn't been James Forrest for quite some time. But when I looked at my list and I was like, some of the other players that I had and had not got him, and thought if you put him into the teams that I did have as players from in the 12th position, is he better than them? Yes, he is. So it's a bit of a historical selection. It's a bit of a weight of evidence behind, but if he was not playing for Celtic, and he's, what, fifth choice? And it would no doubt do him a power of good to not be, if he wanted to be, to continue playing, to be actually seeking some first team football somewhere. But I think on weight of talent and what he could do in another team, he merits a place on the list.
It was one I thought about along with his brother, actually, but for different reasons, I ended up not picking either of them in my list. And I think Forrest has, maybe I'm wrong, I haven't seen him play very much this season. I think he has played an all right amount, but I've not seen a lot of him. And he definitely still has something, but I think he's probably not going to go to another club now. I feel like he'll be happy hanging about at Celtic playing 15, 20 games and you know, getting chucked in. And that's fine if that's what he wants to do, but yeah, it does feel like he could, an Ayrshire boy, he could be offering something to other clubs. But I can see why he was. I mean, I think he's probably topped this list before at some point. But that's probably he's in his 30s now, certainly. But his Scotland days are probably behind him. His Celtic Champions League days are behind him. But yeah, he probably would offer something in certain teams in the league.
I think it was that kind of swung it for me. Like, would he get into 8 of the remaining? Yeah, absolutely. Would he be there or thereabouts with another, another couple? Yeah, he would. The fact that he is going to see out his playing career at Celtic, he will, like, at whatever point his contract runs out and he decides that he will call it a day, I have no doubt. I don't think he'll ever go and play for anybody else. So it's much more on the brief glimpses of the old James Forrest that we see and what he could theoretically do for somebody else, rather than what he's done this season, which is nothing. He has not let the side down by any stretch, but he's quite away from the James Forrest of 4 or 5 years ago, when he was one of the best players in the country.
I think that's probably fair. My number 12, I had this been done in like February, March, he probably would be a wee bit higher, but there's a bit of a sense of it could have been a bit of a flash in the pan. It is Livingston Stephen Bradley, who I've gone for. He came, obviously Hibs youngster, spent a bit of time playing in Ireland, came in at Livingston. And I would say from that wee spell where he burst into the team, he looked very, very good. He obviously scored a few goals. He's quite direct. He was playing particularly well. Round about that time, I watched a few Livingston games for the podcast, and I think that's also going to influence one of my selections higher up the list. But he looked really, really good. But as Livingston have tailed off, so too has he. He's been in and out of the team a wee bit. But I suspect, to be honest, that next year's list, he may feature a little bit higher here, because I think there's some influential players leaving Livingston and he's probably not one of them, so he's probably going to be leaned on a lot more. I would say from the first half of the season, if I was picking a Livingston winger, it would have been Dylan Bahambula, who probably had a similar trajectory in that sense. Like, there was a game they played against Killy where I thought he was superb, but he's ended up not playing very much as well, and so... I I hummed and hawed about having two Livingston players in this list, and I ended up, I have got a couple of them, but I think Bradley was just clinging on by his fingernails at the end because, yeah, I don't think he's finished the season well at all.
He is. He's also my number 11. For similar kind of reasons, I think almost the opposite for James Forrest, that I think when Livingston inevitably do absolutely fine next season and they have a really good, solid six-month run before players are start to get out of contract and they are more than safe and inevitably the there's a kind of a, they take their foot off the gas a little bit in the run into the end of the season, he will be absolutely fine. He'll exemplify all the good things about Livingston. He'll be tactically versatile, hard running, but like a little spark of creativity about him as well. It'd just be interesting to see if he kicks on again next season.
Yeah, I think it seems like the kind of standard good bit of business that they do in a kind of cast off from a bigger club. But yeah, I think the jury's out a bit. But yeah, I agree with you. The next season will be a big one. So my number 11 then, if he's your number 11, is a player who's very lucky to be on this list, I think, given the season he's had. But again, probably we're looking at pure talent, and it's Heart of Midlothian's Barry Mackay. It's hard to decide if he is a winger at all, because he probably played his best football in the central positions, but I think we had a chat about it, and his starting positions do tend to be from wide. I think he's vastly overrated as a player. I think people got carried away off of a handful of good performances when he joined Hearts. However, he was pretty important in them finishing third last season. I thought he started this season all right. He's really faded. I know that a lot of Hearts fans have been wanting him out of the team for a while, but he has still shown those little moments. I feel like the bottom of this list is a bunch of players who are there on what they can do rather than what they have done, and he's certainly one of those. But I might prejudice what you're saying, but I couldn't in good faith put people like Matty Kennedy, Dre Wright, and Ilmari Niskanen above him, or Jordan Jones, or other players who I kind of thought they've got some level of ability in these positions, etc. But ultimately, even and not playing very well, Barry Mackay, which has probably been about 85% of his career, to be honest. But that not playing well, Barry Mackay, he's still a very talented footballer, and he's one of those frustrating players that you think that probably a wee bit more application earlier in his career may have taken him a lot further.
I've got him very marginally higher up. He's like the John Carpenter of wide players. He's like all wide players, kind of with an attacking slant, are almost by their very nature inconsistent, because they're being asked to do the hard stuff, and they're being asked to be creative, and they're being asked to unlock defenses and, you know, provide an X factor. So, but there are going to be games that they're just marked out games. They're anonymous. He is like the John Carpenter of inconsistency. Like, either he seems to have an absolutely genius game, or it's like absolute trash and just completely anonymous. I think there were flashes of that towards Christmas, where he started being a bit more like the player he looked like for longer spells last season. But it's been a bit like that throughout his career, where there's been flashes of inspiration and there's been times when he's played a ball or he's seen something that nobody else on the pitch would see. And you know, that goes back to his time at Rangers. There were occasions he would do things where like nobody else would have seen that or done that. And then absolute anonymity for two or three games. And I think that's kind of been a recurring feature when he went down south, recurring feature of his career. I do still think there's something that I quite like, but I think it's a stretch to put him much further up. He is ninth of my list, so he's one.
I'm also prejudiced against him because for a while when he was like doing all right with Rangers and then when he went down to Swansea at first, there was a lot of Kelly fans giving it like, oh, why did we release him when he was younger? But it was like it was entirely injury related, and also like I don't think his career would have panned out close to the way it did had he been with us, to be honest. Anyway, so. There's definitely quality there. And I think he was in the Scotland squad as recently as September. I think he was on the bench for the, I'm sure him and Kingsley both got called up for the Ukraine away game. He didn't come on the park. But so he's shown that he obviously got a cap in a game. Those two friendlies against France and Italy, I think that was when he played. I did not see those games and therefore don't count them as canon as Scotland games. So he's uncapped as far as I'm concerned. Apologies if that's not the right game where he was capped, but I think it was. I think it was just after he'd probably had his best season with Rangers that he got his single Scotland cap. It was the friendly against France that he played in, and as I say, I did not see those games. I was on the other side of the world on holiday, so two times detached from Scottish football at that point, and therefore, as far as I am concerned, he does not have a Scotland cap.
I like this. We can be.
It's the only two Scotland games that like I have no because even if there's other ones I've missed, I've kind of properly gone back and caught up with these games, you know, for whatever reason. But these two, I was like, their friendlies means nothing. I've never seen a goal from them. I've never really properly looked at the team lines from them. So I'm just like, I know he played, but it doesn't count. So that was your number. Sorry, that was my number 11. We're on to number 10 then. Yeah. For you, who have you got?
I've got Johnny Hayes, who has grown to be more of an all-rounder, has played a lot of the season at wing back, and there have definitely been a handful of people that seem to think he's lost pace or that he's become less important. I think at the start of the season the feeling was that he was a good squad player to have, but certainly since Barry Robson came back, since Barry Robson took over, Johnny Hayes has been like he's captain. He was captain the last couple of games. He has, I think, he only got 5 or 6 assists this season, but considering he's much more of an all rounder, like sometimes he plays, he has played on the left hand side of the front three. He has played in midfield. He has played as a fullback and as a wing back this season. But as much as his defensive qualities are decent, he's still good going forward. Like, he's still tricky. He's still quick. He's not as like blisteringly quick at getting to the byline as he once was. But he's still very good at getting a ball in. He's still very, there's a bit more intelligence to the way he plays as well. Is it a position that Aberdeen probably need to upgrade for next season? Can he play 40-50 games next year? Probably not. But he's been very, very solid and quietly effective this season. Even in last night's game against St Mirren, was every time he got the ball was really direct. Again, a few years ago would have been much further up the list, but I think has been very, very quietly effective this season.
Yeah, I'm a massive fan of Johnny Hayes. So he's one place higher in my list. I've got him at number 9. And I completely agree with you. I think, obviously, he was superb in his first spell at Aberdeen. He was very good for Inverness before that. I think he also did pretty well with Celtic. I think, like, obviously, he was never signed to be a first choice at Celtic. They maybe paid quite a large sum for him, I would suggest, like, considering his age, etc. But he basically did quite well in his time there in what were sometimes difficult circumstances as well in his second season, I think. But has not really missed a beat since he returned to Aberdeen. And yeah, there's been tough times, but certainly, thinking back to, like, there's been some big games this season, the game against Rangers at Ibrox, where you thought, like, his directness and all the rest of it is just important. He was playing in that game. I'm not making that up. Like I doubt myself there, but that was the one where I thought, you know what, he's still got the legs. He's still got the ability to do it. And yeah, he's not going to do it as often. But I always think of like someone like Chris Burke, who was like 33 or 34 when he joined Killy, and you thought, you know, you're getting this washed up. Has been, and he probably gave you his best years of football. I think there is much more scope for wide players who are a bit older, who've looked after themselves and who are smart. And I think he comes into that category. He's a clever player to succeed kind of well into their mid and late 30s, to be honest. And I would not be at all surprised if we're still talking about Johnny Hayes on the lower reaches of this list in like 2 or 3 years' time, to be honest. Sorry, I was trying to avoid that. My number 10 then is someone who I think is going to be on your list and potentially quite close to this. Someone who would likely be higher if we had seen any football from him in like the last 4 or 5 months. It's Hibernian winger Martin Boyle. Clearly a very good winger. Clearly a very. He was one of the best players in the Scottish Premiership before he left for Saudi Arabia, or wherever he went to play, when he cashed in his morals for money, as so many people have before him. And then he came back. He obviously, that was just this season, which is crazy to think. That was only the start of this season that he obviously made that quite heroic return for Hibs, basically off a plane. Was it a carton of Yazoo he had the night before? Because he basically didn't think he was going to play. The international clearance came through in the morning of the game.
Yes,
and he came on and equalised. and he came on and scored the equaliser for Hibs. And there were signs that he was getting back to his best. Had another big. I think he played against Rangers the week after that, if I remember rightly, or very close to that, and had a good game again, a good impact on that game, and then subsequently got his injury, which was obviously a very bad time for him. Is he on your list, Tom?
He is very slightly higher up. I mean, for all the same reasons that you said. I think I think when he left, there was a very good argument that he was the best attacking player outside of the Old Firm. There was a pretty good argument. Well, like, he was better than a handful that were playing there. Like one of the best, one of the top five attacking players in the division comfortably. Whether playing in a less competitive league would make any difference, whether coming straight back into it can't have been personally it must have been an odd time and tumultuous time for trying to get your head down and just play football and looking forward to the World Cup at the time that he came back, and there were question marks about whether he would be anything like the player that left, even though it was a relatively short time between. And it certainly looked like it, but it's just hard to. So I have him. I have him in eighth place. I have him in eighth because it's a big injury. He's not as young as he used to be. Whether he's going to be able to come back and have that same sort of impact, unclear, but. Even if he came back at sort of 70% of what he was, still be one of the. I would still be comfortable with him being kind of around that.
Yeah.
So let's say around that seventh spot.
Yeah, I think he's. It was very, very unlucky in his time, and obviously it would probably have been a big career moment for him to be able to play at World Cup as well. And obviously it was nice that the Australian squad kind of welcomed him over as part of the squad anyway, but. It's probably his one and only chance to do that, given that it'll be like 34 by the time the next one kind of rocks around. It's, you never know, because Australia are not going to qualify and are shite, so it's entirely possible. But
Just start playing further back.
From an international football point of view, like, he probably would have had a few Scotland caps if he had hung around being Scottish for a bit longer at the time that Australia got in very early on him, in the sense of when he was just starting to show some promise as a top flight player after obviously a pretty up and down start to his career, it would have to, you'd have to say, like his time at Dundee and his time, Dundee was his kind of introduction to the top flight. You never really thought much of him then, and Australia got in before he kind of got particularly good, but he would definitely have had some caps, I think, given some of the other wide players that we used in that period. But it's probably worked out well for his career. It got him that opportunity, because I don't think a Saudi club would have been particularly interested in a Scotland international compared to an Australia one, just with the Asian Confederation, etc. So it probably worked out well for him financially as well. And yeah, a player that we hope to see back. I think we will see him back. Like he seems like he's kind of obviously fought back from injury problems before, and it would be good to expect that at some point next year, I don't know what his progress is, but at some point next season, early on, hopefully we get to see him back in the league. So I think like the bottom four places, because you had Barry Mackay at nine, is that right?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, so we've got all the nines, and you had at eight, Boyle.
I had he was number seven.
So you have, okay, so wait, right, because I've got nine, Johnny Hayes, 10, Martin Boyle, 11, Barry Mackay, and 12, Stephen Bradley. We've definitely talked about all of those. Your number nine, we've already talked about. So who's at number eight for you? Is it someone we've covered? Or
it's not. It's Livingston's Joel Newbley, who I think we're counting as a wide player.
Yeah. I was pushing quite heavily for him to be counted as one, because I think he plays most of his football in a wider position, and definitely plays his best football in a wider position, probably with the exception of those games where he's gone up against Rangers, and Rangers particularly, actually, but Celtic sometimes too, and played through the middle and just like terrorised centre-backs. I think most of the good stuff that I've seen from his time at Arbroath last season, he was mainly used off the left, and his time at Livy, likewise, his best performances certainly, and he's been an absolute terror to Kilmarnock, have been in wide positions. So yeah, that I think it's reasonable to count him in this role.
Well, I've got him in eighth, which is he was, when I first started doing my list, very slightly higher than this, but again, for reasons of Livy slightly tailing off and a bit for the positions that he often finds himself in, you would want a little bit more. I think you'd want a few more goals, which is a bit harsh from considering what I think he's got, 6 for the season, 7 for the season this year, which for most wide players is a perfectly good tally, but does occasionally play through the middle and has, like you mentioned, particularly, and two of those have come against Rangers where he has absolutely terrorised them. Killy, you mentioned, I think there was a Ross County game a couple of years ago at the start of March where he was terrifying again. And I think when he's an unorthodox wide player, when he is on his game, he is nigh on unplayable. And I know that Ewan in the group chat, as a Rangers fan, has suggested that he would very much like a Joel Newbley in the Rangers team, partly, almost entirely based on Joel Newbley performances against Rangers. But I think he's a very good Livingston signing. They have a workman-like front line who, when they click, complement each other really nicely. There's probably not enough goals in them, but there's a fair amount of variation, and there's a fair amount of, they've got some different weapons there, and I think he's the most potent of them. And he's kind of just picked up where he left off last season to some extent.
Yeah, I think he probably has tailed off in the second half of the season, but Kelly played Livingston 2 weeks ago. We beat them pretty comfortably at home, and he was the only Livingston player who wasn't, to use a Robert Bothwick expression, a bag of shit. he was good in that game, and none of his teammates were. And apologies, Rob, if that's not the expression that you use. It's something like that. It always gets a laugh out of me. I'm gonna play a fair bit higher on my list, actually. So I will leave all of my effusive praise of him. I mean, it's a lot of the same as what you said, but I think, for example, I think our both would have won the league comfortably last season if he'd stayed there. He was by far the best player in the Championship last season, even though he was only in it for half a year.
Yeah.
And I think he will be off from Livingston in the summer. I'd love to see him stay in Scotland, but I don't think he will. But my number eight is someone much closer to home. It's Kilmarnock winger Daniel Armstrong. I think it's pretty fair to say that without Daniel Armstrong, Killy would be relegated. I think he's been massively influential this season, and I think he's been involved in the bulk of their goals, as you and Taylor, second mention in a row for him. We'll be saying every Killy goal for a while just seemed to be him like swinging the ball to hitting off one of the big lads, as I used to say. And there were a lot of goals early in the season came from his set pieces. I think there was a spell where that was basically the entire game plan. He's tailed off a little bit, probably because other teams have got wise to him. I still think he's been good. I think all along he's a good player, but his influence has been entirely because the tactics been built around him, rather than him being, you know, an amazing Premiership winger. That's my view on him. He's impressed me a lot because last season he obviously came in for the Championship. He'd been pretty impressive at Raith Rovers, but they'd said the same about him being quite inconsistent. He's obviously had his spell at Ross County before, when they kind of signed him to try and win, when they were trying to win the Championship. Didn't really feature much then. It was very much the same with Kelly last season. You didn't see a lot of him. He was on as a sub every now and then, and he was one of the players that you assumed would be discarded pretty quickly. And probably it would have been if we didn't have him on a two-year contract at that time, to be honest, like so many of the players. And instead, we started to see him, because I remember I was up at Fraserburgh in the League Cup at the start of the season, and he was playing as a right wing-back, and I thought, this is unusual. A left-footed kind of pretty attack-minded winger who had not really shown much in the way of defensive nous, playing as a right wing-back. And fast forward several months, and he is still playing as a right wing-back, still doesn't have a great deal of defensive nous. In fairness, he works very hard. I don't think you could question his work rate, but he can't defend that area and behind him, but he offers so much as an attacking threat. And what it does by having him there is it lets him attack from deeper, which is what he's really, really good at. So it's very much a kind of the double-edged sword of him playing in that position. But I think his set pieces are amongst the best I can remember from any Killy player in a long time. And he has taken on a hell of a lot of responsibility for the team, especially in the darkest days. I think we've got one or two players who have improved over the season and whose confidence has improved over the season. On the Patreon, we'll talk about the game. We'll talk about Kyle Vassell and the impact he's had on the team. But for me, Armstrong has been influential. But at the same time, I think he's definitely not better than any of the seven players I have above him on the list.
I do have him slightly higher up on the list. You have seen a lot more of him than I. But I think any time that I have, a lot of it is, as mentioned at the start, a lot of it is weighted in the importance that how important he is to his club. Now, there are definitely better technical footballers below him on the list. There's a couple of that have probably been left out that, if they were slotted in to the Kilmarnock team, would be every bit as effective. But I'm really impressed how he's kicked on. I think, he was good for Raith, but I don't think I don't think anyone pointed at Kilmarnock this season and were like, he's the danger man. He's the one that's going to get double figures. Like, he's the one that you're going to have to watch, especially in the system. So I've got him at sixth, partly, I mean, he's above Martin Boyle just because of the question marks over what kind of Martin Boyle he will come back. But I think been seriously impressed with him this season, and I think not interesting to see what he does next. If people, because you mentioned people have got wise to him, but whether the numbers that he's put on the board this season, I mean, there's transfer speculation about him, or whether he can kind of reinvent his game a little bit.
I think if Kelly stay up, then I suspect he'll be with us next season, because I don't think he's been good, but I don't think he's been so amazing that another team would be like, oh, we need to pay money for this guy, is my view. But if we go down, I suspect that there'll be enough interest that we'll probably make some, you know, do something there. Right, so that takes us, that's my number eight. We've covered your number eight already.
Yep, we've covered my number eight, my number seven, and my number six.
Okay, well, my number seven, and this is where I'll probably get people throwing, probably you and Taylor get throwing things at the device that they are listening on. I've gone for Rangers forward / winger, Fashion Sakala. I have grown to like him as a player. I have to say, I thought he was absolutely terrible when they brought him over. I thought he was not long for this country in terms of his game, because he seemed to be signed as a forward to run in behind, a centre forward to run in behind, against playing for a team who almost never have the opportunity to run in behind because they play against packed defences, and it didn't really seem to work out. And you think, well, maybe he's signed for Europe, but they got all the way to a European final last season, and you didn't really see a lot of him in the run. He certainly wasn't influential in that run. So you were kind of thinking, oh, well, what's the point in this guy? But this season, I would say, reinvented himself quite a bit as a fairly, I would struggle to say the word effective, but as a wide player, certainly. And he has shown flashes of what he's about. He has what must be an incredibly frustrating habit of missing absolute sitters in important games at Hampden, which can't necessarily be the best trait to have. Two very similar ones in the League Cup final and the Scottish Cup semi, both at the kind of same back post. But he's been amongst the goals a lot more this season. It's been, I would say, a breakthrough season for him at Rangers in terms of like him justifying his place at the club. I think they'll want to keep him around now, whereas I think before it, you kind of thought, you know, they'll be desperate to kind of feed them off to anyone that will take them. I find it very hard to get a grasp on exactly how good he actually is, but he has at least impacted games a lot more this year, and he's had games where I've watched him and thought, you've been very, very good here.
I think I have him on my list. This is a recurring theme. I've got him as number five. I think he's a good player. I think he is a very good player for Rangers when they've sometimes needed a plan B. Like he seems to be incredibly effective against Motherwell.
Yeah, well.
And in years past, when those have been games when Rangers might have dropped points, but largely this season has been just an inability. The reason they've lost league is an inability to lay a glove on Celtic in the head-to-heads. In previous seasons, it's been, those games may have been slightly closer, but it's just, you know, hemorrhaging points elsewhere when coming up against a one-off match. I think he's very good in that. For me, he is a really strange mix of being both, for, you know, I've got him for me as the fifth best wide player in the country, and not quite good enough, like quite replaceable. I think he's had a decent season. He's got what, 10 goals this season. Like you say, there's been a bit more to his game. He's been able to, he's not just been running in behind, he has stretched things. He's been good off the bench when against tired legs, he's been good. And he's been a little bit more direct as well than I think he has been. But that, like, he's not a youngster. He should not be missing the number of, like, it's not just sitters. It's not just in games that really matter. His finishing can be like surprisingly excellent. Like, you know, it's just so inconsistent. The ones you'd expect him to to if he finished, you know, if he finished the way that some others on the list would, he would have 18 goals a season comfortably, and he's got 10. And that's that difference is quite a significant difference. But having said that, I do think he's a good player. I do think he would get into most teams in the league. I do think he has improved, and he has, you know, he's improved under Beal, and I think he's a bit more tactically astute than he was as well.
Cool. Well, and we've already covered your 7 and 6 and 5 now as well. So I'll just keep listing players.
You keep going. I'll shut up from now on until you catch up.
This is one that I'm sure will be on your list. He will be higher up on your list. I would have been higher up last season. I think he has not had a good season, but at the same time, he scored 13 goals for Celtic. It is Leah Labada, a player I was a big fan of last season. Like for a young player, very direct, really ghosted in at the back post very well. Came up when it mattered quite a lot last season for Celtic. This season he's really faded a bit. I think there's obviously been a little bit of discussion about his future, and I think I don't know if he's maybe been asking to play more, and then he's been kind of suffered as a result of that or what's happened, but you've not seen as much of him. He's not influenced games as much. I've been keeping a very close eye on his career because last year I had a very successful tactic on the SPFL fantasy football app of selecting him as a super sub, which is when the player's a substitute, you can bring, if they come on and do something, you get treble points. And I got him in the draft again this year for the same purposes, and he's been nowhere near as effective at that. Because his impact off the bench has been much less. He did score a hat-trick, potentially off the bench actually, but he definitely scored a hat-trick against Dundee United in that 9-0 game. But he hasn't had anywhere near as good a season this year. I suspect if he was to stay around as a Celtic player, he would no doubt, you know, regain his form, etc. But I have the feeling he'll be leaving in the summer, and we'll probably... I think he's a talented enough player that we'll probably look back and he'll be playing in England, or he'll be playing somewhere at quite a high level and be saying, oh yeah, remember when he played here, he did all right here, kind of thing. But I decided to put him that. I thought I like to have a bit of a mix in my list, so I've got him at number 6. And number 5 we've already covered for you as well. I think you've got a bad somewhere higher up. Do you want to talk about him now, or do you want to?
I'll let you catch up, and I'll give a brief summary of where he is. He's not that much higher.
So number 5 is another player who hasn't been mentioned yet. I suspect on your list, I suspect also higher, unless we've crossed wires somewhere. It's Hibernian's Eli Yuan. A player who I thought was going to be terrible at the start of the season. I watched a couple of clips of him, and I saw him in his first couple of games, and I thought, like, speedboat with no driver. It's the kind of the vibe I got. And then you're like, well, he's quick, but he's actually good with the ball. But then you were starting to get the vibe of incredibly greedy. And that was another thing that seemed to be a problem for a while, was an unwillingness to kind of pass the ball. And I think they played Killie in February, maybe at Easter Road, and they beat us comfortably. But I think it was 2-0, and it could have been about 8-0 if he had at any point passed the ball to a teammate instead of just constantly trying to dribble. But since then, I mean, I think in the last 3 months of the season, he has probably been the best player in the division. Last night against Celtic, he scored 2 goals. One of them is obviously a horrendous error, but the first goal, the quality of that finish is unreal. And what we've seen in that system that Johnson's been trying to get them to play all season, his directness, his pace, coupled with like the intelligence in Nisbet and what several other players offer, he has looked very difficult to stop. Because he's quick, he's talented, he's a good finisher. When he doesn't have time to think about it, type finishers. And if he's at Hibernian, they've obviously signed him permanently, but you never know what that means. But if he's at Hibernian next season, I expect him to probably be in contention for like Player of the Year awards, because I think he's that good.
Indeed. Is that your number five?
He is my number 5, yes.
Well, I can go with my 4 and my 3, because that is Leah Labada and Eli Yuan. similar to what you said, I think we do sometimes forget Abada's 21. And I am not surprised that if he moves from Celtic this season, I think it will be entirely because he is angled for that, because he wants to be playing a lot more. Like he's been off the bench almost the entirety of this season, but hasn't necessarily kicked on the way that after a pretty spectacular debut season, but still like 10 goals, 5 assists, and in flashes has been absolutely brilliant. Like you say, I don't expect him to be around this time next year. I think he'll be moving on in the summer, and I think Celtic will make a decent amount off him because he's a very, very good player. Yuan, who I've got a number, he's in at number 3 for me. When he started at the start of the season, it was like clockwork mouse or something. It was like impossible to catch and would beat players twice. And I couldn't quite see beyond like sheer pace what exactly Hibs had signed him for. Like, he didn't really seem to fit the system. He wasn't really a forward. He wasn't creative enough to be a wide player. But he was direct without being direct in the right areas. And then probably around the time of when Hibs beat Aberdeen 6-0, it clicked for him. And I don't know if it was confidence. I don't know if it was just understanding the system. I don't know if it was like he was finally up and running and fully fit. And since that point, he's been sensational. Like, he's been all the little parts that you were critical of at the start of the season about not quite being about being direct and like everything that I've just said. But like, he's quick, but he's and direct, but he's not effective with where he's going. There's not an awful lot of that sometimes just needs to take a beat to think about what he's doing. Rather, now he's doing things on instinct, and those instincts are phenomenal. It seems like Hibs have got a bit of a star there.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think we will see a lot more of him next season in terms of like I feel like he's going to be a one-man highlight reel at times. If he sticks around. Now, I'm interested here. So first of all, I'll say that my number 4 is Joel Newbley. He is my favourite player in Scotland. I love watching him play. I especially loved the moment when Livingston recalled him last January, because that was the moment that won my team the league, to be honest. He has been a consistent terror against Kilmarnock, so it's maybe a little bit biased in that sense, but he's a very unorthodox player in that you do not get many 6'2", 6'3", 6'4", whatever he is, physical guys who have got such good feet. And he's like, it makes him so hard to play against, because if you get tight to him, he just bounces you off physically. If you stand off him, he can skin you. And if you like do neither, he can pick a pass. So there's like, the only weaknesses in his game is that he's not that quick and his finishing is really, really, really bad. But for those two things, I think you would be talking about a Premier League forward in England. Like I think he's that good in terms of the other things that he does.
And he would be Egil Olsen's dream.
Well, an attacking, a wide forward kind of thing. You got a target man winger. Yeah, like he used to use Torre Andre Flo for, but he's much more he's much more robust than Torre Andre Flo as well. I think Newbley is an absolutely fascinating player, like his career. The fact that Livingston kind of basically signed him out of obscurity, they obviously weren't sure about him and so sent him to Arbroath for the first half of last season. probably realised by about August that they had made a grave mistake in doing so, because he was like clearly good enough. And then he's kind of come back in the team and not really missed a beat as a Livy player since then. I suspect they'll get seven figures for him in the summer. I think he's still under contract, and therefore I think they've got a year on him. So he will be sold. They will make good money. I would love to see him stay in Scotland. I would love, especially if like someone like Aberdeen were able to push the boat out and sign him, I would really love to see how he would do in a better team in Scotland. Would it be that he has been such a perfect fit for Livy that actually he wouldn't be able to replicate it at a bigger club? Or would he actually benefit more because he'd have... I feel like there's a sense sometimes with Livingston now that teams can put like three or four guys around him. Whereas if you're playing with another team who've got also lots of other good players, would they actually look even better? Because they would suddenly get space and time as well. I don't know, but I am probably the single biggest Joel Newbley fan in Scotland. And yeah, I really can't wait to see what happens to him. But I will be glad not to see him play against us again, to be honest. Now that brings me on to my top three. Now I'm curious now, because you've obviously only got two players left, and either you have chosen not to include someone as a wide player, or there's a player who you've chosen to exclude, which I could kind of understand, because although he has been over his time in Scotland a very, very good winger, he's probably not had that impressive a season, and I don't know which of the two we're doing here. But I have it number three, and I think it would be reasonable to not have this player, Rangers winger Ryan Kent. Do you have him?
I do have
him. Right, so I think you've not got someone on your list who could be considered as a striker, I think. But Ryan Kent is my number three. I don't think Ryan Kent has had a good season by his standards, and I think a lot of that has been down to the fact that he wanted a move in the summer and he didn't get it, and I don't think his heart's been in it the same way, and I think it's kind of gone full circle on what I expected from him, because everything about Ryan Kent's when they signed him, I thought this is a guy who is not going to have the heart to play for Rangers. Like, I thought he's going to be another loanee who comes up and has kind of got that kind of pampered English big club mentality about him. But then I watched the game they played against, and I hope I'm not mistaken in that he did play in this game, but because this is my entire thing about his mentality is based on this. They played Ufa in the Europa League, I think, in one of his very first games, and they went down to nine men, and they were really, really hanging on in the game. And he, I thought, was excellent in terms of like just how much running he was willing to do, how much he was willing to defend, how much he was willing to graft to kind of see out the 0-0 draw that got them through the next round. And ever since that, I've thought, you know what, I've misjudged you as a player. And I think he's taken a hell of a lot of stick from Celtic fans and fans of other clubs, to be honest, on the basis that his numbers aren't always as good as they could be. But despite him not having the numbers, I think what he has is one of those intangibles that a winger can bring, which is that he brings the team up the park so much. He's an outball. He is a distraction to defenders, to wide players. He wants nothing more than to cut in off that left flank and curl shots in with his right foot. And the fact that teams have to prevent him from doing that usually means they double up, usually means someone else is not marked, usually means they can stroke a pass, and usually it has... The season Rangers won the league, I thought like he was so important to that, and he was hugely important to their run to the Europa League last season as well, to the final of that, which they lost embarrassingly in a penalty shootout. And then this season, I think he wanted a move, he didn't get it. He's had some glimpses, he's had some moments. He's only scored three times this season. He's played most of the season for Rangers. That's obviously not good enough. However, I think he will get an English Premier League move most likely in the summer, and I think he'll probably do all right at that level.
Yeah, I have him at number two on my list. I think he's, but that is purely based on what I think is on the ability that he has and a bit of historical legacy, because I don't think like he hasn't been at the races this season for all the reasons that you highlight. I think he's like, it's like, for all the people that are like, oh, all he does is all he does is cut in and shoot. And from Celtic fans who adored Tom Rogic for however many years, that he's Tom Rogic, but with pace and directness. When he's and but the, I think what you've got to admire as a wide player is there's a physicality to it as well. Like he's not intricate. He's not like it's not like dancing feet. It's almost like American football running back style, that he just eats up the yards. And that's massively underrated, I think. I'm sure there are metrics somewhere for, you know, secondary assists or something like that, that in terms of getting into a position so that somebody picks up the loose ball after the third tackle has come in and then plays the pass. And I think when he was on his game, he was like phenomenally good at that. And if you've got the way that the Rangers had played, certainly under Gerrard and in the European run, when you've got three runners, when you've got three people breaking at pace, it's incredibly hard to defend against, especially if you're tight defensively and you can kind of spring the trap, which is what they did really effectively. And I think he was a key part of that. I would have absolutely no doubt, it would be no surprise to me whatsoever if he goes to, you know, what I suspect it will be a club in the lower reaches of the English Premier League, but this time next year has enough about him that he's in the frame for, you know, England caps. I don't think he's significantly worse than some of the players that have had caps for England recently. So I am not unhappy to see the back of him because he's been a nuisance, and delighted that Rangers are getting absolutely fuck all.
Yeah, they've really fucked that up. Like, they've really done quite badly. And to have him and Morelos leave for free in the same summer is incredibly bad management.
Well, as one of my friends said, they're making a loss on Alfredo Morelos.
Yeah. Right, so my number two is a player who I can only presume is not on your list for the reason we discussed, which is Dyson Maida. I didn't personally want to include him as a winger. I think he has a forward who just happens to play on the wing. However, I think we kind of established maybe to include him there, but I would assume he would be on your list if you'd thought of him as a winger.
I both missed him on the list, but I had thought of him more of as a like off the striker.
Yeah.
But yeah, the system, yes. So if I'd considered him, he would be on the list.
He'd probably be in exactly the spot that I've put him in, or just
there or thereabouts. Yeah. Yeah.
So Dyson Maida, I think Tony Anderson made the comparison about two games after seeing him of Dirk Kuyt, and it's absolutely perfect. He works so hard. He is clearly a talented player, but he's also a wee bit less talented than his effort. So he gets to a much higher level than he should ever be at, because he is so much energy, so fit, and he's got so many physical attributes, which is why you see him popping up at like the last 16 of the World Cup for a team who probably should have got to the quarterfinal, despite two vastly more talented teammates not being included in that squad, because he offers so much. He's added a lot more in terms of finishing. I think his finishing has been better this season. He's added a lot of goals. He's direct. He is incredibly fit. He's also at that level which will annoy fans of other clubs, I think, which is that he's not good enough to get a move elsewhere, so he's going to be at Celtic for a long time, unlike, I think, the player that we're about to pick as number one, who will probably not be there for long. I think we will probably be seeing him featuring at like number two, three, four in this list for a long time. Never quite good enough to be number one, but he's a very good player, and that trio of Japanese players, that the three that have been good for Celtic basically, that all came in at roughly the same time, will go down as one of the best bits of transfer business kind of done in a long time.
And you can see why people love him, and I like the Dirk Kuyt comparison. I think there's lots of ways of becoming a cult hero, and the hardest one is consistently, but consistently having work rate as a especially as a forward player. You know, there's lots of cult heroes who scored one goal. It was that goal for whatever reason, and I think he's, yeah, a bit of a dog of war, and we love that. We love that.
I think. But, I was gonna say, I think if they have a better team around them, he could probably do quite well for them in the Champions League, because, like, as just like a real pest and a pain, like, he's clearly not good enough, but like. Player like Dirk Kuyt playing in the final of it, like which I'm sure he did the second time Liverpool were there.
If Celtic were a little, sorry to interrupt, yeah. I think if there is, and there should be, like I think I've said this for a good few years, anytime there's a complaint about Celtic from Celtic fans about, you know, turning up and, you know, turn up in Dingwall and they put 10 men behind the ball, and it's like, yeah, because that's what you do to hope that you get something from a better team. What you should try and do is learn something from these games that you yourself can then take into Champions League games. If there is an element of pragmatism that comes into Celtic's Champions League campaign next year, he could be a really phenomenal player in a more compact, hit him on the break. You know, we are all going to have to run 10 miles to make this work. I think he could be I'd love to see him as like almost the number nine in a team that's playing, like, you know, like rather than be a poor man's Dirk Kuyt, he could be like a rich man's Curtis Main.
Oh yeah, what a dream. A man can only dream. That brings us to number one on the list. I assume we've both got the same player, another Celtic player. Someone who I think would have been number one on this list last year, I would probably argue has not had as good a season as he did last season, but it is still Jota.
Yes. There's a pretty good argument that he's not just the best wide player. He's the best player in the league, certainly the best attacking player in the league. He's been consistently the kind of go-to. Most of this season, there's not been... In previous seasons, it was like, oh, Celtic, they're a goal down to St Mirren, or they're going to, someone pops up with a bit of improvisation in the 70-something minute, and then there's a winner in the 92nd. This season, it's been, oh, they're 1-0 down to St Mirren, and then I look away and I come, oh, it's 4-1. It's 4-1 with 10 minutes to go, and inevitably Jota's got two of them. And I think in... as a difference maker in games when maybe Celtic haven't been at their best, but also in the really important games and the Old Firm games especially, like he's been an absolutely phenomenal player, and just talk of inclusion in Portugal squads, and absolutely merited. He will inevitably get probably a Scottish transfer record or thereabouts.
He'll go for a lot of money.
I just remember what that is now. But he will be a kick in the arse off 20 million quid.
Yeah, I think so. And I think they'll probably cash in this year, because I suspect there's been a tacit agreement of come to us for this couple of years or the year permanent, and then we'll move you on when we get a big enough offer. They might convince him to stay for the Champions League for another year, but I don't think we will be talking about him as a Celtic player this time next year. Open to that way, but yeah, he's such a talent. He's one of those players who is a very improvisational attacking player. Like, it doesn't really matter what position on the pitch he finds himself in, he manages to kind of create something. He manages to find a flick, or he manages to kind of cross it to the outside of his foot, or he manages to beat a man kind of when he looks like there's nothing on. And those are players that are rare in world football, but they're especially rare in Scottish football. There really hasn't been one like him for a while. There are aspects of his game, I think his consistency is not there, which is often the case with players like that. He probably should have more goals, to be honest. I don't know how many he's got, but
10 this season and 11 assists.
That's right. It feels like he could have more than that, and he definitely had the ability to have much more impact in Europe than he did this season or last season, to be honest. So I like him as a player. I think we won't be talking about him for very much longer, and I think he's thoroughly deserving of the number one spot. Anything else to add on these, Tom?
No, I just completely agree. I think Josh, he's the only player in the league that has double figures for goals and assists, and that's actually quite like a, you know, reading a lot into stats, but that doesn't happen very often. There are a couple of outliers with like James Tavernier, but he doesn't tend to get tons of assists.
Yeah.
It's always, no matter what league it is, it's always quite telling if somebody can hit double figures in both, because there's a lot to them.
There's a lot of ability. Perfect. Well, thank you, everyone, for listening. Please feel free to tag me and Tom in every single piece of disagreement that you have. But we actually agreed with each other quite well there through that, and we'll put together a combined list for it at the end. We will now be going over to do the Patreon, where we're going to talk about the Wednesday night Cinch Premiership action, which obviously was quite decisive at one end of the table and indeed at the other for your club, Tom. So we'll be able to dwell on that a little bit. You can join Patreon. These ones will be for £2 a month. There's a £5 a month tier where you get a lot more content than that, and there's a £7 a month tier which has other benefits like it's like a fanzine and stuff like that, which you're probably a bit late for this year, but have a look at it anyway. So I'll just say thank you very much, Tom, for joining me.
Thanks very much.
And thank you, everyone, for listening.
Sports Social Podcast Network.